Good morning.
Arnold Schwarzenegger. Hi there.
Who are you?
It's Dave White of Talkin'
Talkin' Fugitive, and you got a little preview of Talkin' Television, which will be coming up in about an hour. Everything functioning well back at the studio, but anyway, we're Talkin' Fugitive with Kitty and Bob and Ken. At least I got that much right. If you want to join in the discussion, 800-407-KSAV, 800-407-5728, or you can email me during the program, talk@ksav.org. At other times, you can email the hosts at fugitive@ksav.org. And now we get down to serious business. Bobby Neer, you start things off.
Okay, Dave. When we were here 2 weeks ago, we began talking about a season one episode entitled See Hollywood and Die. And when we left everybody off in two weeks ago, Richard Kimball and a woman named Joanne Spencer had been taken hostage by two maniacal killers. And Richard Kimball was trying to figure a way out. And one of the things we discussed most in that the Act 1 and Act 2 of that story was Kimball's remarkable ability to be what he is not, to take on a different identity in order to get on the good side of these crazy lunatics that he was with. If he was good at that in the first two acts, and he was, he's even better in the second two acts, in which he really is remarkable in his ability to make split-second decisions that are going to save lives in the long run. And, excuse me, and as we get into Act 3 of that particular story, we have what I think is one of the creepiest scenes in the entire series, and that is where Kimball and Joanne Spencer and Miles and Vinny, the two killers, decide to stop for something to eat, and they're at, I'm not sure exactly where they are, they seem to be at some scenic overlook, which has a restaurant in it, and Vinny goes in to get something to eat for everybody, they stay in the car. And Miles decides that he wants to goad Kimball into proving what a lover he is. I don't know exactly why, since Kimball hasn't been claiming that he was that all along in the story, but Miles is out of control and he's liable to do almost anything. So he virtually demands that Kimball show how good he is at it by making a move on Joanne Spencer in the back of the car. Now, that would have been bad enough, except that while they're doing that, and Kimball does do it, he does everything in this episode that he needs to do in order to save their lives, even this. And while he makes a move on her, rather mild move, nothing too severe, Miles is on the outside of the car and sits on top of the hood, peers into the car, finally bends over and presses his lips against the front window and gives this big wet kiss, and it is absolutely as creepy as anything that you will ever see. In the meantime, Kimball is trying to convince him that he's really doing something. Joanne Spencer is looking at him like he's crazy, which is understandable. And Kimball says to her, we have to pretend, he says to her directly, he says he has to believe that I'm making time with you, which is kind of a quaint mid-60s way of saying what it's just suggested. And actually, so what does he do? Well, he's whispering in her ear, and he's kind of nibbling her ear and her cheek. Actually, he was doing more with her than he was doing with Karen back in Never Wave Goodbye. While he's doing that, she's prattling on about her life and about how she was supposed to get married, and she didn't do it. She ran away from it. I'm not sure that has anything to do with what's going on, but the worst part of this is what Miles is doing on the outside of the car. I mean, he's just a voyeur. He's just looking in the car, and it is really extremely creepy. Ken, I went back and read your review of this particular scene, and you say that this is the part you didn't like because you thought it was forced. And I would say, yes, it's forced, because who wants, is Miles leaning across the hood of the car and peering into the window going to be something that's going to turn Joanne Spencer on? I don't think so. So it was forced, and you said something in there like, come on, Kimball, give me a break. So why did you feel that way, and what did you expect Kimball to do?
I thought it was an awful scene. Joanne Spencer looks like a damsel in distress.
Yeah.
And look it, she doesn't know Kimball that long. How long has it been? Maybe, what, an hour or 30 minutes, whatever they were driving, however long that took.
A couple
she
hours.
She doesn't know who Kimball is.
Yeah.
And then he starts, you know, whispering in her ear, you know, and he does kiss her. And I just kind of cringed. I just looked at that and said, oh, what is this? Can't they have a better scene than this? And then she's just kind of crunched up in the seat. And then, you know, she never smiles. She's just got the horrified look on her face. And
well, what exactly is she supposed to do? There's a guy outside the door with a gun who's demanding that they kiss each other.
If I was Joanne, look at, you know, we've talked a lot about this. In The Fugitive, a lot of these women are very mellow or very strange. If I was Joanne, I give Kimball a whack right across the cheek. I don't let him, you know, just start, you know, almost not only hugging her, but almost got on top of her. It was really embarrassing.
Yeah, but there's also a guy standing outside with a gun pointed at them.
Who cares about Miles? Get Kimball off of me.
But if she hits Kimball, Miles is apt to open up the door and put a bullet between her eyes.
maybe not. I don't know.
maybe not. I think the scene is not about that. It's all about Miles. It's just another attempt to show what an idiot he is and what a lunatic that he would even suggest such a thing. It would have been bad enough that he did that, but he bends over and stares into the car. I mean, he's watching them, whether they're doing anything or not. I mean, I think that's what it's all about. Did you find her general attitude in the early part of the story where she was very quiet, did that bother you too? Did you want her to be more hysterical?
I wanted her to stand up and try to make a fight out of the whole scene. She kind of goes along with everything. I can understand that part. But at one point, she's got to lose her patience. And she did. She did make the move. She ran
out of the car. Yeah.
But I was thinking, with these two guys, she's got to stand up. She was a marshmallow, in my opinion.
Well, I always thought that that was her version of what Kimball was doing. Kimball was playing it cool the entire episode, not showing that he was nervous or worried about anything, that he's just as much a criminal as they are, so nothing impresses him, and I just thought that that's what she was doing. She was just playing, because she keeps giving him looks to the side, as if to say, I don't know about you, but I'm just going to try to get through this. Kitty, what do you think? She should have done more, or what?
No! She's got guns pointed at her head. She saw Miles shoot the one guy for absolutely no reason. There was no reason for him to shoot the guy. He just shot the guy for a thrill. He's already telling her she'll get out of the car when he goes, bang, you're dead. I mean, what is she, this is, you know, what's she supposed to do? She's supposed to, what, stand up and read him the riot act? I mean, yeah, that's a good way to get a bullet in your head significantly sooner. You say she acted like a damsel in distress. I'd say if anybody qualified as a damsel in distress in this series, Joanne was a damsel in distress in this episode, and she was justifiably a damsel in distress. She's got guns pointed at her head.
Well, ironically, on the message board the past couple of days, we had a discussion about certain women in the series,
yeah.
About whether or not they're just stereotypes. And I thought that this was an attempt not to play a stereotype. She could have just been hysterical and screaming and crying in the car.
That's true. You know, she was playing it more cool than
exactly.
than Jane was, who was a policewoman in the most recent episode
exactly.
we did.
Yeah.
But Kitty, I wanted
And
more.
Jane didn't even have a gun pointed at her head.
But Kitty, Kimball is he's coming up with the plan to get out of this, right? Well, where is Joanne's plan to get out of this? Where is her, saying something to Miles and Vinny?
Maybe she's just paralyzed by fear.
That's what I didn't like.
People actually do get paralyzed by fear.
But I didn't like that. I wanted her to be smart. I wanted her to be a little more crafty. Just don't just be there.
Well, I don't know. The woman pulled into a gas station and asked for a map. And the next thing you know, she's taken by two psycho
right.
killers. One tried to do God only knows what in the front of the car with her when they were in the auto dealership. So I don't think she's in a position to think about anything.
Why not?
She's probably terrified.
Why not?
Well, because she's scared.
Yeah, but she can think up of something of how to get out of it. You know?
Know.
Maybe she could come up with a plan that she has $150,000. Her dad's
wealthy. The only thing I thought was silly in this scene was her prattling on about not getting married or whatever. She ran away from her marriage. and actually, I got the feeling when she was talking to Kimball in that scene that she actually was enjoying this. There was some excitement in her life, which is a little bizarre.
Yeah, that did seem a little out of left field, I have to admit.
Yeah.
You know, you'd think that she wouldn't want to be confessing to a total stranger why she ran away from her marriage.
Right.
And, you know, and whatever else.
I got the feeling she was just thinking, well, this isn't so bad. It's more exciting than what was happening to me before. But that was ridiculous. Well, I took a different look at this than Ken because I didn't really care what she was doing. It was all about Miles to me. I mean, Miles is a scary character, and he's getting worse by the minute. And he's gotten worse just since the story began. And this is a great example of it. But I have something else in this scene that I think is really disturbing, far beyond any of this, and that is that while they're all outside and they're in the car and this is going on, Vinny goes in to get them all something to eat. And a little diner inside there, and he goes up to the counter, and he orders 5 cheeseburgers and 4 cups of coffee, and the woman behind the counter only charges him $3.90. And I don't know how it's possible, because if you went to McDonald's and used the value menu today, it would cost you $10. So maybe I should have stayed back in the 60s, because that was a great bargain. And they were eating the cheeseburger, and they looked pretty big, too. So that's incredible. I'd forgotten that you could actually buy food for $4.
Well, remember,
we
reviewed an episode not that long ago where Kimball bought a piece of pie for a quarter, and they gave him a discount on it.
Yeah, it's amazing.
You know, while they're in the car, and she's coming up with this lame brain, past of hers. Why not in that scene have Kimball and Joanne devise a plan on how to get out of the whole situation instead of talking about a lot of loony stuff?
Well, maybe the writer couldn't think of anything. I don't know. But he's already got a plan. But he doesn't need her. He's got a plan. He's formulating a plan in his mind.
Did Joanne make a suggestion on how to get out of the whole thing throughout the whole episode?
I would agree to the extent that I would say there's something lacking there, and that she should take a more proactive interest in her own survival. But I don't know. I think she's too terrified. Anyway, in this scene, after they do this business in the car, then Miles goes out and he goes to this little telescope they have there that you put money in to see the scenery, and he's twirling it around like it's a gun. And a little boy walks up and he gets him in the sights and he goes pow pow pow. I mean, Miles is in that case. That's what I like about him. I mean, we did a show on favorite villains about a month or so ago, and Miles was on that list because he just is completely out of control. It must be fun to be an actor and have the director say, just, you know, let it all go. Just be a maniac. Don't hold back. And he really does. He's about as scary as anybody I've ever seen. So, you know, I think that in this position, nobody really had a plan. Kimball, it's obvious that he's just buying time. You put yourself in Kimball's position, he can't do anything. What's he going to do? Go to the police? Flag down a cop somewhere? He can't do that because he'll be in trouble, and he can't stay with them because it becomes apparent very soon that they have no use for her and that they really plan on killing her. So Kimball has to come up with his own plan. That, I think, is a very disturbing scene. And then they simply go on, and of course they're supposed to be headed for Hollywood, and eventually they pick up a newspaper, and by this time they have the police are looking for Kimball because he left his fingerprints back in that garage when they dumped her car, and now they're looking for him, and his picture is plastered on the paper, not theirs but his, and that's when Joanne finds out that she's got not 2 killers in the car, but 3. And you must have been happy that's when she went completely crazy. she sees, Miles shows her the paper,
and it says that Kimball is a wife killer, and she completely loses it at that point. If I remember correctly, she steps on the brake in the middle of a freeway.
Yeah, and she jumps out of the car and runs.
Yeah, and luckily for her, all of the drivers are stunt drivers, so everybody stops in time.
Well, but they also remembered they didn't want to spill the coffee and, you know, fork up, because that's right, it's kind of expensive. We're going to take a quick time out, about 1 minute. We'll come back to find out about Miles smooching through the window and all kinds of stuff when we continue to talk Fugitive here on Retro Radio.
Conversation is real. It took place on Tuesday, June 8th of 2004 between a Blonde Star advisor and a subscriber.
Blonde Star emergency, this is Steve. Is there an emergency in your vehicle?
Oh my god. I've locked myself in my car and the keys are on the outside.
Ma'am.
Oh my god.
Ma'am, I need you to calm down.
Okay, it's just that the windows are rolled up and I'm starting to sweat. My keys are on the outside.
Now, your keys are on the outside of the vehicle?
Yes, oh my god.
Now, does your car have automatic locks or...
Yes.
Here's what I need you to do. Take hold of the inside of your door handle there. Are you doing this? The shiny thing. Grab the shiny thing.
Okay, I've got it.
Okay, now give that a tug.
Okay.
Did it open?
Yes, oh my god, thank you.
Okay, now what is that noise?
Oh, that's my door alarm.
Yeah, but that only happens if the keys are in the ignition, hon.
Oh my god, you know what?
Your keys are actually in your ignition.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh my god, thank you so much, Blonde Star.
That's why we're here. Do you need anything else?
Blonde Star.
No, that's
always
it.
On, because you're always blonde.
All right, things are improving. We got the right commercial break this time, so we're doing better at the midway point. See, on the Talkin' Television tonight, my guest is going to be Denny Miller, and he appeared in the Fugitive. In fact, he was at the Fugitive Convention in Louisville this last year. Did any of you guys go to that?
No.
No.
See, just real aficionados like me know about that. That's, you know, right. What episode he was in?
I don't have the book in front of me at the moment, but I remember it.
Not necessary, but I have all this right in my head. That's all right. It was called Approach with Care.
That's right.
All right. Okay. Anyway, now that I've done the heavy lifting, you go ahead and take over.
Okay. 2 weeks from tonight, we'll be back here, and we'll be doing another Season 1 episode. A lot different than this one. No crazy killers in this one. Kimball's on the road and finds a little religion while he's running around when he meets a nun named Sister Veronica, who's also on the run herself. That's a two-part story, but we'll do the whole thing in one night. Don't ask me how, but we will, because that has to fit into our schedule. So that's 2 weeks from tonight, Angels Travel on Lonely Roads. That's the name of the episode. Okay, back to the story and Act 3 and Act 4. As I said, Joanne, having found out that she's now got Richard Kimball in the car, simply loses it. She finally does what Ken wants her to do, which is to make a move. It's a stupid move to stop a car in the middle of the freeway and run out in the middle of traffic and start running away. Kitty, what do you think? Was this a good move on her part to try to get away this way, or just more hysteria?
Well, it seemed odd that she would try to do that on the freeway. You would think that it would be a little more logical to wait till they exited the freeway, and then she could, you know, if they stopped, say, in front of some type of grocery store or something like that, I mean, where she'd have easy access to run away, run through the parking lot and run in and get
help.
And
somebody was around.
Yeah, you know, so it is a rather impulsive thing to do. I guess you could say this is part of the hysteria of being a damsel in distress. She's not thinking it out. In hindsight, you know, you could say a better move would have been if she had calculated something, you know, for her to run out of the car when they actually stopped the car.
Ken, were you happy to see her do something?
Well, she does it impulsively when she saw the picture, right?
Yeah.
The famous newspaper photo of Kimball.
Right.
That was an odd scene. And then she runs through the tunnel, and then Kimball grabs her. For a moment there, you think she's going to make it, and then Miles and Vinny come.
They show up at the other end. Yeah.
Yeah, show up, and then they point the gun again, and she.
I tell you, there is a good line in here that I really like, though, and that is that Kimball grabs her and tries to calm her down, tell her she's got to play along with him, or they'll never get away. And she says, "I'm scared of them, and I'm scared of you," which pretty much sums up her position. I mean, she's caught in the middle of nowhere. She can't trust anybody. Imagine, it's not terrifying enough to be with them, and now you see in the paper that Richard Kimball supposedly killed his wife? That's a pretty awful position. So I cut her some slack on this. I think she's in a horrible decision. Well, at any rate, it does not work, and Miles and Vinny show up at the other end, Miles waving that gun again, and Kimball, on an instant, turns around again. I mean, he's great in this episode. They should have done more of this in the series, where Kimball could instantly become somebody else. He convinces them right away that, he was just chasing after her, trying to get her. He's not trying to help her get away. And so they're not too bright, so they believe everything he says anyway. And then they're back in the car, and now Kimball's really up against it. I mean, it's just so long that you can continue to ride around and claim you've got a partner that you're going to meet for this big score without actually coming up with something. Even Miles and Vinny are not so stupid, they're not going to see through that after a while. So they decide, you know, they want to know more about this partner he's going to meet. And they decide, you know, have him come to us. You'll cut us in on the deal. I think he offers them $10,000 if they'll help, whatever. He never really states exactly what's going to be. And they decide that they just, you know, it becomes apparent at this point that they're going to get rid of Joanne, that they're going to kill her. By the way they're talking, and you see Kimball and Joanne in the car. She looks even more terrified. Kimball realizes that it's time to do something because they just want to kill her and dump her body somewhere and go off with Kimball and make this the great amount of money they're supposedly going to make. So what we have coming up then is that Richard Kimball has his very best, I think, in the entire series. You talk about thinking on your feet and coming up with a plan at the last second. You know, this is amazing. So, Miles decides that Kimball should call his partner. So they go to a phone booth where supposedly Kimball is calling this non-existent person who's going to help him commit this crime. And as a viewer, you have to think to yourself, well, what now? I mean, is he just going to fake it? Is he just going to not dial a number? Because Miles is standing right there. The door of the phone booth is open, and he's hovering right over him. And Kimball makes this this great decision, and he gets on the phone, and he's supposedly talking to somebody, gets on and says, this is Richard Kimball, so on and so on, acts like his partner's on the other end. What's interesting about this scene is that we don't know really what's going on. The director does this in an unusual way by not letting us in on exactly what's happening. So I can remember watching it the first time thinking to myself, what is he doing? Who is he talking to? Did he call Donna? Who's he calling? Because Miles stupidly does not insist upon listening to the conversation to find out who's on the other end of the phone. It turns out quite differently. Kimball is calling a newspaper reporter to let him know what is going on. How did he get the newspaper reporter's name? Well, there's a paper box right there by the phone booth with an advertisement for a columnist in an L.A. paper named Tim Cates. And Kimball calls him up and says, this is Richard Kimball, so forth and so on. Or at least hoping, that the reporter will report this to the police. Kitty, how surprised were you at this?
Oh, I thought it was very well played. You know, if there's one thing I wish we could have seen, I wish we could have actually seen the reporter on the other end after Kimball hung the phone up, you know, with the reporter with his hand on the receiver going, oh, is this for real?
Yeah, I know.
You know, saying, in somebody asking, what's going on? And he said, Richard Kimball, the notorious wife-killing doctor, supposedly just called me. I thought that would have been great to see in the show.
It's a high-risk thing because you can't really be sure the reporter's going to get it. And understand it. I mean, I think if I had been the reporter, I probably would have said, this is a joke, it's a crank call. But he had nothing to lose by doing this. But talk about deciding quickly on your feet. What do you think, Ken? Did you like that?
Yeah, it was a good scene. I wish the series would have done more of that.
Yeah.
And Vinny fell for it. And actually, I could believe, you know, when you have two young punks and they're just, you know, they're not really that sharp in being criminals, I can believe them falling for this and for Vinny to wait at the hotel thinking that his partner is going to fill him in.
Right.
I could believe criminals doing that. And
right.
Well, you know, there's an old saying that the smart criminals usually aren't the ones that get caught. It's usually the dumb criminals that get caught.
Yeah.
Well, I was impressed by this, and I think that the only thing I would complain about is I'm not so sure this was a smart way to film this. By keeping us in the dark, and then as the phone call ends and they walk away, the camera pans back, and you see the paper box there. It says, "Read Tim Cates in the Los Angeles Tribune," or whatever.
Yeah.
And then we realize what he's done. It might have been more suspenseful if we'd seen it right away when Kimball first walked over there, so that we could be nervous on whether Miles was going to understand what was going on here and how he was being set up. But either way, it's impressive because, you know, Kimball, I always say, to be a fugitive and stay free like he does, you have to be smart. And in this episode, I don't think there's another episode I can remember in which he's this quick on his feet in doing this kind of thing. So, obviously, there is no partner named Tim Cates, and Kimball's still up against it because now it becomes, how are they going to get rid of Joanne? That's all that's left. Miles obviously wants to kill her. And so he makes Kimball drive the car, and they go off to this, what appears to be a construction site where they're constructing houses. And he marches them up in the dark there on a little hillside. And I found this scene extremely disturbing. It's a very, very scary scene because Miles goes up there, Kimball's standing beside him, and he says, "Oh, you got yours. I've never killed a woman before until now." And then he points the gun at her. He has every intention of shooting her. I thought it was a very terrifying scene. But Ken, in your review, you claim that it was a good scene, but no surprises.
A little flat, sorry to say it, Bob, because all we have is a little tense moment. He's pointing the gun. Did Kimball say, "Give me the gun and I'll shoot her"? Now, that was...
I don't remember that.
No, he never said that.
No.
Didn't Kimball say, let me take
care of... He said to Miles, he said, you got one. Remember the old man at the gas station?
Oh, that was the scene, okay.
Right, and Miles says, I've never killed a woman before, and that's what he decides.
But here, Bob, you know, when you have an end like this, it's almost like Kimball is the white knight, and the girl is just waiting to be rescued. You know what?
Kimball's always the white knight, though.
All right, Kitty, this is the way I would have written it. Kimball says, "Hey, look out."
One minute, guys.
Okay. I would have said, Kimball goes, "Hey, look behind you," and then Joanne picks up a rock and clubs Miles right off the head. Instead, what do we have? Kimball grabs a gun, he fights, you know, knocks him out, and big deal, da-da-da-da-da.
Well, you just want Joanne to be just a...
I want Joanne to do something.
All right, well, I'm sorry.
How about you, Kitty? You want Joanne just to stand there?
Well, you know, I don't know what
she
was
doing there. She started to move away.
And at the end, when they asked her which direction Kimball went, she pointed the opposite direction. You know, it was interesting. He asked her. He wanted her to know that he didn't actually do what the paper said he did, and he wanted her to believe that. And you know, we never really know if she believes him or not. She just tells him to take the car and go.
Well, I like the scene. The only thing I would complain about is that Kimball looks at Miles and he says to her, "He'll be out for a while." And characters always do that. And I don't know how anybody knows after they punch somebody out how long they're going to be out.
A while. That's how long. A while.
You know that.
All right. Well, I think that wraps it up. And this was pretty good. I was wondering what happened. And did Kimball get his job back at the gas station? Okay.
No gas station is there. You remember got killed. Yes,
that's right. Okay. 2 weeks from tonight. Join us again, talk a little more Fugitive, and 1 hour from now tonight, Talking Television with Dave White, with Denny Miller. So thanks to you guys, another good job, and everybody else, stay tuned to KSAV, Share a Vision Radio.